This is Jonathan Strickland from Tech Stuff.
We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh the Jet Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Benny and the Bryant. And Jerry's over there. And she's just Jerry. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
Jerry's Captain Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Why are we talking about a piano player?
How about Mr. Roboto?
Sure.
Okay. Jerry, Mr. Roboto, Roland.
Great.
So, how you doing, man? I think you're probably pretty jazzed about this one.
Do you think?
Yeah. Tad?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this one as a musician and guitar nerd. Uh-huh. And we definitely want to shout out at the beginning, the inspiration behind this and a lot of the research for this came from the great book called The Birth of Loud. There's not a colon on the cover, but it's implied.
Okay.
Should we get a different jingle for implied colon?
Yeah, but it should be like a down kind of thing, like burn.
Okay. The Birth of Loud, Leo Fender, Les Paul, and the guitar pioneering rivalry that shaped rock and roll. And this was from Ian Port in 2019. And it is if you're a guitar player, just get the book. You've probably already read it, but if you hadn't, get it because it's great.
Yes. Hats off to him. Hats off to Dave Roos for helping us out with this one as well, too.
Totally. Dave did a great job.
So
this is a two-parter, right?
Yeah, we're going to two-part it up because it's that big. It's that important of a thing. It's really easy for people like me who, appreciate music, but also appreciate music too, you know what I mean?
Sure.
To kind of overlook the epic story behind electric guitars. It's almost like I didn't think they were always there, and I knew roughly when they'd been invented, and I think I kind of knew who invented it, but I didn't realize just what a sweeping effect and impact that electrifying certain kinds of guitars had on the world. Like it's one of like the most impactful inventions ever made.
Oh, absolutely. And then when you look at this story and read that book especially, the gentlemen, Les Paul and Leo Fender, it's a remarkable story in that they were very similar in some ways. They were very, very different in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. They both ended up with permanent injuries that affected their craft. Mm-hmm. When one was up, another might be down a little. And this goes to the guitars as well. When the Fender brand was up, it seems like the Les Paul was down. When the Les Paul was up, Fender was down. And it's really, they both kind of tried to take credit for things that they didn't really invent at times. So it's really interesting when you look at the story of these two dudes in this era of innovation and invention and just how remarkable it was. And for the people who are really unfairly left out, that had maybe even more to do with it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of hands that went into the creation of the electric guitar as we understand it today. A lot of people, a lot of unsung people. These guys just happened to be two of the ones whose names, became synonymous with electric guitars. But that's also not to say like they didn't deserve to have that kind of recognition too. They really did contribute, even if they did kind of, like you said, take credit to some extent for things they didn't necessarily do specifically.
Yeah, it's one of those inventions that if you ask someone who invented the electric guitar, you have to follow that up with a lot of questions in order to answer it. Is it the person who invented the electric guitar pickup, which made it possible to electrify something? Mm-hmm. Or is it the first person to stick that pickup on a chunk of wood instead of a big hollow guitar? Mm-hmm. Or is it the first person to actually build one that worked that you could sell to people? You just can't answer that cleanly and say, this person invented the electric guitar. Like, five or six people invented the electric guitar.
Yeah, and if you're just a normal, like, non, you know, guitar person, you probably regretted asking that question.
No, you just say, is that Freedom Rock?
Hey, man. Yeah, that ran through my head more than once for sure.
Turn it up.
So I guess we should get started with, you want to start with Leo Fender?
Yeah.
So Clarence Leonidas Fender. Webster's defines Fender as Clarence Leonidas Fender. He doesn't have a good name, and he's one of these guys. You said that he and Les Paul, who we'll meet in a little while, were very different. And Leo Fender wasn't just different from Les Paul. He was different from a lot of people. He was what you would call an engineer. And if you have a parent who is an engineer or a friend who's an engineer.
I thought about your dad.
Or you're an engineer, you know that engineers are different kind of they're cut from a different cloth. And Leo Fender was definitely an engineer from what I can tell.
Yeah, I totally thought about your dad during this. Leo was born on August 10th, 1909 in Orange County, California. And his first injury that affected his craft was his eye. When he was between 7 and 8, he lost an eye when he fell off his dad's vegetable truck and had a glass eye from there on out. You know, it's not like losing an ear, which we'll get to that later. If you're an engineer who works in generally in sound, but when you're working on small circuit boards and stuff like that, losing one eye is certainly going to affect your work.
Well, plus also, he apparently was self-conscious about it, which is just that tugs too. At my heart. Can you imagine a little 8-year-old Leo Fender who's like, you know, can't look up, he's looking down at the ground all the time while he's talking to you because he's self-conscious about his glass eye? That's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, and like you said, he was an engineer, little electrical circuit board nerd. He would take things apart and put them back together from an early age. There's a great story from the book. When he was about 10 years old, he got underneath the car and the driveway and basically took a look at it, what was going on, went inside and sketched out not only just what it exactly looked like, but how it all, and could explain how it all worked together to make that car move.
Yeah, which is astounding. That's like prodigy kind of stuff. Like, he was an engineering prodigy is another way to put that.
Because absolutely.
Not, you know, even among engineers, it's pretty remarkable. And especially as a kid to do it too. And then what makes him even more remarkable as an engineer and for all the things that he accomplished, he never had any formal training as an engineer. He just kind of became one just by doing things that engineers do. It was like taking things apart, putting them back together, inventing new stuff, improving things that he thought can be improved. He just kind of learned by doing, which is, you know, that's old school.
Very old school. Get in there and tinker away, right?
Yeah, but if you don't have overalls on, what are you doing? You know what I mean?
Now, was your dad always tinkering with things in the house too?
No, he was more like, I've had to like make drawings all day at work. Leave me alone. Maybe bring me an old Milwaukee tall boy before you leave.
Okay.
But if there was anything that went wrong in the house, you know, my mom would be like, can you fix that? Can you fix this? And he could fix it all. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, yeah. For sure.
I can fix nothing.
Yeah. He was too busy, like, he was too busy leading Cub Scout meetings that I was not a part of any longer to tinker. He was too busy.
Well, it sounds like you guys found a great way to not spend time together.
We did. Well, I would bring him beer. That's how I got to spend time.
Right. So Leo was really fascinated with radios early on as a child. He would build his own. He got a broadcast license when he was in high school. And before you know it, he had kids and neighbors, adults even, that would come over to have him fix their radios, mm-hmm. and to the point where he had a little repair shop in there in Fullerton, California, where the big Fender factory ended up being.
Yeah, I guess it started out at that as the radio repair shop and just kind of grew from there, right?
Yeah, as a Radio Shack.
Isn't that cool?
A literal Radio Shack.
Yeah, I guess so. I think that the good people at Radio Shack would have had a problem with it had you called it that. But it was that. You could have made a case like, no, Radio Shack is the ripoff. This is the Radio Shack. And the judge would have been like, shut up.
Capital T.
You're all going to jail.
So he was building radios. He started working on PA systems, public address systems, which, if you don't know what that is, it's always people are getting on me now for saying, like, everyone knows what that is.
It's what the principal talked on.
Yeah, or anytime you have a microphone attached to speakers, that's a public address system.
Yeah, that's funny because it has been a little while since somebody called you out on that because you stopped saying if you've been living under a rock. But now, Chuck, they're meeting you wherever you're at as far as that's right. concerned.
I think I'm trying you to just, do better.
You either have to completely stop or just give up caring. One of the two.
Well, I explained what a PA system was, so maybe I'm on the right track.
I think you did great with that.
So this is when he started to become obsessed with what we're just going to call the big challenge, which was basically you have to think back to a time where music was not electrified. They were singing through microphones. They did have lap steel guitars were electrified. That was technically the first electric guitar was the lap steel.
Yeah, the Rickenbacker frying pan I saw.
Yeah, that was kind of the very first thing. And in fact, the guy who started Rickenbacker, George Beauchamp, he was the inventor of the electric pickup.
Yes.
So you got to thank him big time for kind of leading the way.
Yeah, he basically, he laid the foundation that who knows how long it would have taken. But I just want to like explain to people who are like me who don't understand this kind of stuff just real quick what a pickup is.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
The pickup is the heart of what makes the electric guitar electric. And it basically works through electromagnetism, where you loop a bunch of like copper wire around some magnets. And then when you move the strings above those magnets, it actually affects that magnetic field and produces an electrical signal. That electrical signal goes from the pickup through the cord to the PA where it's amplified, and now you have an electric guitar. And that's the guy who came up with this astoundingly impressive invention, because not only did it work, he figured out how to make it pretty small right out of the gate. Like that frying pan electric lap steel guitar is ugly, but it was small and compact. It wasn't like those early computers that took up an entire room. He like figured out how to make it, you know, useful right out of the gate. It was a big, big innovation from what I can tell.
Yeah, and another way to think of, if you know nothing about guitars, of the pickup is it's like the microphone for the guitar.
Right.
When someone is playing a guitar, it's that little horizontal, usually sort of, not oval, but it's square and then rounded. I don't know what that shape is. What's that called?
Ellipsoid?
Is that real?
Yeah, it's like an
ellipse. Is that what it really is?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
So I mean, I'm guessing here.
It's the little ellipsoid underneath the strings. Sometimes they're covered up. Sometimes they're left open. Like on Fender guitars, they're left open. Mm-hmm. There's something called a humbucker pickup, which Fenders have a tremendous amount of hum and buzz when you plug them in mm-hmm. because it's only one magnet. Humbuckers had two sets of magnets that canceled the hum out mm-hmm. from each other.
Yeah.
And those are usually, but not always, covered up with a little steel plate.
Right. So humbuckers, just two pickups so that they, like you said, they cancel out the electrical noise from the other equipment that it picks up, right?
Yes. And that's what I prefer.
Sure.
Although I do have a Rickenbacker, I prefer and have quite a few Gibsons.
So when we say like the electric guitar, you just hit upon something when we were talking about the frying pan. The frying pan was the world's first electric guitar. It was from 1931. It had pickups. It had amplified sound, but it was a lap steel guitar. So very shortly after that, we had what other people would call the world's first electric guitar. This is where that answer where you're like, well, who invented the electric guitar comes from? Because what a lot of people would recognize as an electric guitar came after, and it was from Gibson, I think, in 1936, where it looked like you know, a normal guitar, but it was electrified, like the classic acoustic guitar, but an electrified version. And you'd say, well, why doesn't that qualify as the first electric guitar? Because it doesn't. For our purposes for this episode, that's still not the first electric guitars we're talking about. What we're talking about is, as we'll see, what's known as the first solid body electric guitar. That's what we're really driving at. So if you're sitting there, you know, and you're just crumpling your issue of Guitarist magazine right now and losing your mind, settle down, because I just spelled it out for everybody, okay?
Yeah, and so getting back to where we kind of got off track in a good way, but getting back to the big burning question and the big problem was with these, they called them Spanish guitars, but we call them acoustic guitars now, that had those electric pickups in them. They were really prone to feedback because they had this big hollow cavity behind the hole, or it, you know, it usually had what's called F holes. And that sounds funny, but if you look at them, they're just shaped like an ornate sort of cursive F.
I'm glad you said it.
So because of these big hollow acoustic guitars with these pickups and early amp technology, they would just feedback like crazy anytime you tried to get any volume. So
yeah, those pickups wouldn't differentiate between the vibrations from the string that you were intended or the reverberated vibrations from inside the hollow body of that Spanish style guitar. And so it just sounded awful.
Right. So that was the thing that Leo Fender was obsessed with. He was like, how could, because, you know, it's hard to imagine, but at the time the guitar was not a lead instrument, and it was, there were occasional like guitar solos and stuff that you could insert into a recording, or, you know, they recorded lives, but you could put on a recording. But like if you were playing live in a venue, the guitar was very much in the background because you couldn't turn it up loud enough to cut through the vocals and the drums, the piano, the horn sections. These were all really loud live instruments. And he was like, Leo Fender was like, we've got to be able to amplify this sound such that it doesn't feed back to where you can actually hear the guitar in a concert hall.
Yeah, so like it can stand on its own rather than accompany, you know, whoever the horns or get drowned out. Like that was the point of like Fender and later on Les Paul's quest is to make the guitar its own thing and to basically do that by making it really loud and sound really good when it is loud.
Oh, man, this is getting good. This is a good time for a break, I think, right?
I think so, too, man.
All right, I'm going to go take a cold shower, and I'll be right back. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody, if you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. You know, Chuck, the first cell phone was demonstrated all the way back in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated?
What's that?
Shared plans.
Interesting. You know, over 50 years later, you can save on one line now thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included.
Yeah, that's true. No hidden fees, really. And you can save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. It's 2024, so get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Learning stuff is fun with Josh and Chuck. Stuff you should know.
All right, Chuck, so we're back. So Leo Fender's on this quest. He's figured out there's a big problem here, that if you want to make a guitar loud, you have to make it not an acoustic guitar. But one of the things about him was he wasn't a musician. Like, he didn't clamp onto this problem of creating the electric guitar, figuring out how to make an electric guitar, because he necessarily cared about the music. And he also later on, it turns out he didn't like rock and roll, which would be kind of ironic. He was a country western dude from Southern California, kind of like Nicolas Cage's character in Valley Girl.
Exactly. Valley Girl.
That was him, that's basically. Good. It was based on Leo Fender. That's my theory.
Yeah, so Fender didn't play, but here's something that was very cute, that story from the book. He would go to local music halls during live performances with his – he always had this little tool kit on him, I think much like your dad's slide rule.
Mm-hmm.
And he would jump up on stage and tweak the amps during the middle of performances. And people there would be like, what is this guy doing?
Mm-hmm.
And the band sometimes would say, hey, everybody, this is Leo Fender. He's the one that makes it sound just right. And he would, like, during the show, would kind of get his screwdriver out and mess with the amps.
That's pretty cute.
It's very cool.
Yeah, he'd be like, oh, you want me to turn it up, man? I'll turn it up for you, you dirty hippie.
All right, should we go to Mr. Les Paul?
Yeah, so Fender, we should just recap real quick. Fender has stumbled upon the big problem with electric guitars, the reverb with a classical guitar. So he's thinking about that. And now we meet Chuck Les Paul, who was born Lester Palfus in 1915 in Waukesha, Wisconsin. He was That's a Wisconsin right. boy, like Ed Gein was as well, but not nearly as grisly.
No, but a guitar wizard like Ed Gein.
Right. Little known fact about Ed Gein.
Yeah. So before we get into his childhood, this is the real important distinction between Leo Fender and Les Paul. Leo Fender did not play instruments, was an engineer at heart, and loved to figure out problems for other people. Les Paul was at the height of his game, the most popular guitar player in the world, and with a string of number one hits. He was also a tinkerer, but he was like, I need to make my guitar sound better for me so I can get better and sound better.
Yeah, that was his goal all along. But, you know, it takes a special kind of person to say, like, okay, well, then I need to figure out how to make that happen. I need to figure out how to make an electric guitar rather than, oh, what can I do? I need somebody to do this for me. Someone needs to invent this, or I need to collaborate with somebody. He was like, I'm going to go try to figure this out myself. And he really, like, I didn't realize what a guitar god he was, and that he was like this, I think at one point he had like four hits or four spots on the Billboard top charts. Like he was really a popular musician about midway through his career. But even from a young age, he started out playing. Like he was a performer. And I think he's also credited, Chuck, with being the person, because he played country western too. He also played the harmonica. His act was called Rhubarb Red. And it was just him. And he played the guitar and the harmonica. And he figured out long before Bob Dylan ever came along that that's problematic. You technically need four arms for that. So he fashioned a harmonica holder that he could wear while he was playing the guitar, just like Bob Dylan wore later on. He was the kid who invented that years before.
Yeah, maybe. This is another one of those things where it's like, did he invent it or did he see it and make one on his own? But not taking anything away from the guy. He was also a kid taking apart electronics in his house, putting them back together. He really knew what he was doing. And he also had, you know, like every guitar player, that same big problem was when he played, he would be up there and he could sing through that microphone, although he didn't sing that much. He did when he was a kid, but later on he realized he was not like a pro singer. Harmonica sounded good through the mic, but the guitar was still in the background and he knew that was an issue.
Yes, apparently, as legend has it, he was playing a show at a barbecue stand. And I think it was a regular, potentially a regular show. He could, his harmonica sounded fine. When he was singing, it was broadcast fine because he had a microphone, but nothing was working for the guitar. He was drowning it out himself. So he realized that if he took the phonograph needle, the electrified phonograph needle from his parents' phonograph and attach it to the guitar and then attach that to a radio, he could actually amplify his guitar. So he figured this out, I think, at like age 13, because he wanted to improve his barbecue stand chops.
And tips.
And tips. Supposedly his tips tripled as a result. But, you know, that's pretty impressive stuff. I would not have thought about that at the at the tender young age of 13 or 45.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the tinkering comes in. And I'm sure it didn't sound great to our ears now, but at the time, you have to put yourself in the place of like literally having never heard something like this happen. It had to have been like a revelation to actually hear that guitar coming through a speaker.
Especially if you lived in Waukesha, Wisconsin, you've never heard anything like that in your life.
But he was very much opposite of Leo Fender in his personality. He was very gregarious, very outgoing, made a lot of friends, could also be a little brash, was not a great husband to his two wives, which we'll get to. But he was always sort of the life of the party, and he loved performing in front of people, whereas Leo Fender really kind of wanted to be at the background unless he was very quietly getting on stage. And Les Paul, from the very beginning, once he could afford regular guitars, I think he moved to Chicago and was like making decent money, like backing other people up. But he had a relationship with Gibson from the very beginning because Gibson started out as an acoustic guitar maker, and they're still known. I mean, they make these great electric guitars, but, you know, some of the best guitars in the world are Gibson acoustic guitars.
Yeah, they also made, like, mandolins and, like, just all manner of stringed instruments, and then what they made were basically works of art.
Yeah, they were beautiful, and they still are. My favorite guitar I own is one I bought during the pandemic. I finally bought a Gibson acoustic based on a 1940s model, and it's just, it's amazing. The sound difference between even that and my really nice Martin acoustic is striking.
Really?
Fender was not making acoustic guitars, and they still to this day don't make a very good acoustic guitar.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's really interesting that like one of the biggest guitar companies in the world, I don't know if they can't or if they just don't put the resources toward it, but I think their nicest acoustic guitar tops out at about $800, which is, you know, you can get a pretty good guitar for that, but these really, really nice Gibsons are like $4,000 and $5,000.
Yeah, and like Gibson's whole jam was to make professional quality instruments that were, again, works of art. But like if you were a professional musician, like Gibson could make an instrument that you could use and probably love. And they were making them already. They were making those electrified Spanish style or electrified acoustic guitars as like I was saying, as early as I think 1936 was the ES-150. ES stood for electrified Spanish guitar. And there was a jazz guitarist named Charlie Christian who really kind of championed that development. He think he played for Benny Goodman's band. But I think they named the pickup in those after him, Charlie Christian pickups. So Les Paul was playing these Gibson guitars, but it still wasn't what he was looking for. Because again, if you turned it up really loud, it would provide all sorts of problems.
Yeah, it's funny, these little letters that, like, the ES-335 is just a classic, amazing instrument still today. And they have all these cool letters, and you never know what they name, but mm-hmm. they mean. But electrified Spanish is kind of funny. Mm-hmm. The iconic Gibson SG. SG stands for solid guitar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're all just these very mundane abbreviations that all these years later just seem cool because Angus Young plays it.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. I mean,
ACDC,
yeah, right? If you used a different example from Angus Young, I'd be really on board. But I got you. Oh, man. I know what you're going for.
I play one.
Well, there you go.
All right.
There's a cool axe.
So he charmed his way into the Epiphone factory in New York. Epiphone was a really big guitar maker at the time. And I think Gibson eventually bought them. I think they're co-brand or, you know, under the Gibson umbrella now. Mm-hmm. But he got to work on his problems. And you've got to look up some pictures of some of this stuff kind of starting now.
Yeah.
Just look up a picture of the log from Les Paul. And it was it was a 4x4 block of pine wood, mm-hmm. about 2 feet long, mm-hmm. that he put a guitar neck on, an Epiphone guitar neck, and he made his own pickup. I guess he didn't go out and buy a pickup or use one from another guitar. Mm-hmm. And he made his own pickup, you know, with a magnet and a wire, put some strings on it, and called it the log. And it was a very primitive but working solid body electric guitar.
It looked very much like something Devo would have played.
Yeah, and in fact, it freaked people out so much early on that he ended up taking apart another guitar and gluing sides onto the side of it.
Yeah, to make it look normal.
To make it look normal. And there's this great picture of him holding the log, kind of separating the sides off, mm-hmm. with a little wry smile. But the Gibson, little side note, the Gibson Firebird guitar, which is one of my favorite guitars. I used to have one, but I sold it. It's called a through neck guitar. I'm sure there are others, but it's the only one I can think of that's really popular. Whereas it's the same thing. It's basically one long piece of wood, mm-hmm. like the neck is the same piece of wood as the body, and then they glue on these wings on the outside.
Okay, all right, settle down, Chuck.
It's pretty exciting.
So, Chuck, also, if you ever found yourself trapped in Waukesha, Wisconsin, you go to go to the Waukesha County Museum, and they actually have the original log there on display.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently they have a lot of Les Paul stuff there, including that, with the wings of the guitar kind of pulled away to kind of show.
You know, it's a neck through design like the Firebird.
I was just teasing you. I said to settle down. I was just taking an opportunity. Like, I'm charmed very much, as I'm sure everyone else is, by your childlike excitement over this whole thing.
I'm as excited as when I got my first guitar when I was 12, which was a Candy Apple Red BC Rich, like metal guitar.
I wish I knew what mine was. I had a metal guitar too. Mine was pink, had a light coating of diamond dust, and I wish to God I could remember the name of the band. Who it was, a local metal band from Toledo.
What?
Yeah, oh yeah, they had like an album and a poster and everything. And the guy, the guitarist from the band, worked at like the music store. Where I would take lessons, and he taught me. And he was as interested as, I can't remember Carl Weathers' character in Happy Gilmore, but he's like a golf pro and just uninterested. That's how interested this guitar player was in seeing me as a future guitar player. And it's not like I blame him for me losing interest in guitar, but he definitely didn't. He wasn't a great mentor or anything. But I wish bad I would have stuck with it a little bit longer, because it was pretty boss when I look back on the whole thing.
I never knew this. How long did you try?
I don't know. 5-6 lessons, maybe.
All right.
I wonder what happened to that guitar, too. Like, my parents bought the guitar. I mean, it was used and everything, but, like, I have no idea what became of that guitar.
I never took lessons, so maybe that's the key.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
I just shut myself in my room and started buying tablature Which, if you don't know what that is, instead of actual sheet music, like written out like a, you know, like real sheet music, tablature or little numbers on, they kind of mimic a six-string guitar, mm-hmm. and they put little numbers on the strings on where you should put your fingers. So it allows anyone who can't read music to sort of figure out songs.
Right, like E, E, G, E, 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 G.
What are those chords? Someone's going to call you out on that.
I don't know, but that was a Kids in the Hall reference more than even a Deep Purple reference.
Oh, man, I love that band in the skits.
Uh-huh, the little kid garage band?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, so back to the log. The log was very rough, very primitive, but what it did accomplish was amplification without feedback.
No,
and longer sustain.
Yeah, and more importantly, it was a solid body guitar. Like Les Paul had kind of cracked that code that Fender, as far as I know, was still working on, because this is 1940, right?
Yeah, this was early 1940. I think it was pre-Leo Fender for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, Les Paul really does have a claim to fame to creating the first wooden solid body electric guitar, because I think the frying pan was solid body aluminum. But he figured out that problem of reverb. Just get rid of the hollow body, replace it with the solid body, and it was ugly. That seems to be the big problem. It wasn't exactly what he was looking for sound-wise, but it was definitely close enough that he was like, I'm on the right track. Let me go show the people at Gibson. They're going to love this kind of thing. And they basically laughed him out of the meeting in Kalamazoo, Michigan, because he showed up with a really ugly guitar.
Yeah, and not only that, like, they just didn't see the vision, because, like I said, clearly, they were working with these ancient luthiers who had this ancient craft. They weren't ancient humans, but
they would wake them from the dead each day to go to the workshop and create a new guitar.
But the point is, they were doing great with these big acoustic guitars, and they were like, no one's going to want to hear that, because this is what a guitar is, basically. Like, it's not a lead instrument in a band. Leave that to the horns and the piano. So he was laughed out of there and had a little egg on his face, but this was a full 5 years before Leo Fender came up with his first plank guitar, which you should also look up. Just type in Leo Fender black plank guitar. And it looks a little more like a guitar than the log, but not that much. No, it looks way more like a guitar than the log, but it still doesn't look like a guitar as we know it.
Yeah, it was almost, I get the impression that he created the guitar kind of like how you might build like a car out of clay, but the axle works because you're testing wheels. I don't think people actually
and he
do
built
that.
It as a test. Yeah. But I don't think we mentioned that though.
Yeah, but he was testing out like pickups, and I think testing the concept of a solid body as well. But he wasn't making it like, this is going to be my prototype. But it turned out to actually be kind of a prototype, because I don't exactly know how word got around. I guess because he was friends with bands, so bands would kind of come around the workshop to see what was going on. And they started coming around seeing and hearing this guitar that he made. And people started renting it, apparently, for the weekend to go play shows with and just knocking the socks off of the Bobby Soxers in town, from what I can tell.
Yeah, and at this point, he has the Fender Electric Instrument Company. It's legit. And, you know, in the background of all of this, and we're not going to talk much about amps, but in the background of all of this, he's building amps along the way. He was one of the first sort of master amp builders.
Well, yeah, Fender amps are like as famous as the guitar, basically.
Yeah.
So
don't want to shortchange those.
So where are we at right now? Fender's made his plank guitar. Leo's got his log. Neither one of them are going places immediately with it. It's just kind of like they've both now cracked the problem, and there's a lot of obstacles between them and fame, or at least guitar production fame. But
you know what that means, though, right?
What?
We're at our second break.
Oh, good. Okay, Chuck. I think that was great. So Chuck just said we're at our second break. He's clearly driving this episode. Let's all go with it, shall we?
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. pull off some bank heists, and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Okay, we're back, Chuck.
We're back. We got a log. We've got this little funny-looking black solid body guitar. Mm-hmm. And we need to pick back up with Les Paul in 1941-ish. Mm-hmm. He moves to Los Angeles. He's starting to get session work. He plays with Bing Crosby, who was sort of one of the most popular singers at the time.
Oh, yeah. Dude, he moved to Los Angeles to be near Bing Crosby, which I did a little research, and that was kind of a common thing.
What, to just want to be near Bing Crosby?
Yeah, you move across the country to be near Bing Crosby.
Unless you were one of his kids.
Oh, was he not a good father?
No.
Oh, really?
Not a good dad.
I didn't know that. Wait a minute. Are you thinking of Mommy Dearest?
No. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what I'm thinking of. Thinking of Joan Crawford. But he was a huge, huge music star. Les Paul was out there working with him. But then he gets, I don't think we mentioned, he got electrocuted really bad when he was 26.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
Playing music. He had sweaty hands, held the microphone, was also touching the guitar strings, completed a circuit, and really damaged his hand such that it took, I mean, it hurt his whole body, but it damaged his hand such that it took quite a couple of years to even recover.
Mm-hmm. Which is huge. So, like he might have never played again. Like there was a possibility that was going to happen.
Yeah. And that's just injury number one for him.
Right.
But he gets drafted in World War II, goes to work in the Army at the Armed Forces Radio Network, and is playing guitar, basically backing up the Andrews Sisters, backing up Bing Crosby when they do these USO tours. So as far as the Army goes in World War II, pretty plum gig.
Right. So, and plus he's, again, like he did move to LA to be near Bing Crosby. And the fact that he's getting to like play with Bing Crosby is, I'm guessing, a lifelong dream of his come true. And even after the war, I guess he made enough of a connection with Bing. I'm on a first name basis with him, by the way.
Sure.
That Les Paul, kind of, I guess, became, I don't know if there was like a mentor thing, but at the very least, he definitely patronized Les Paul, helped his career big time. One of the things that really helped Les Paul become like a genuine bona fide star, he was already fairly well known in a lot of circles, had some hits, but what really shot him to the top was a 1945 song called It's Been a Long, Long Time. It's actually a really good song, but it was kind of a song that was a hit because it kind of summed up America trudging wearily back from World War II. And it's just kind of like this mellow, solemn song where it's almost, I'm sure there's other instruments, but my ears pick up Bing Crosby's vocals and Les Paul's jazz guitar. And they his guitar enhances the vocal so much. But there's an actual guitar solo in there. And it's slow, but it's really good. And that kind of shot Les Paul to superstardom from that point on.
Yeah, so Bing Crosby is like, you need to open up a studio. I'll even help finance this thing. He did so in his garage. And before you know it, in Los Angeles, all these famous people are stopping by Les Paul's garage to hear him play, to hang out with him. He, like I said, he was a very gregarious guy. So people just kind of wanted to be around him. And this is all going great. But he still wasn't quite satisfied with what was going on because the sound just still wasn't there. He called it sound on sound recording. He was the first person.
This is huge.
Or one of the first people to experiment with studio techniques where you could layer recordings on top of one another. And this was before they were even recording on magnetic tape.
Yeah, dude, multi-track recording. Like, you know how you hear drums playing and you hear a guitar playing and then you hear, like, vocals. All of those musicians may never have even been in the same room at the same time. You can do that with multi-track recording. Back in the day, if you wanted to make a recording, you had to get everybody into a room. You all had to be playing at once. He had to be playing the song together, and then you recorded it, and that was the recording, right? So to come up with multi-track recording was huge in and of itself. But I looked into what he was actually doing, and it's mind-boggling. He came up, I think, with a song called Lover, and it was that the one where it's like 7 tracks or 8 tracks of guitar?
I think so, yeah.
And the way that he made each track was he recorded one track, the first initial track, onto acetate. He made a record of that. And then he took that record and he played it. And then he played along with it. And then he recorded that onto another record. And then another record. And then another record. And by the time he was doing his 7th track, he had a record of 7 tracks playing all at once on one record that he had recorded one by one. And he was playing the 8th track with it. And if he messed up one time, say on track 5, he had to start all over at the beginning, unless he still had those first few tracks handy. Hopefully he didn't break each record after each recording or anything like that. But isn't that nuts going to that? And that was about as innovating a form of music as anyone had come up with to that point.
Yeah, it's funny when you hear people working with like Pro Tools and drag and drop digital recording now, and they talk about like in the old days when they use when they would cut and splice tape, like go back even further, dude.
Yeah.
to Les Paul doing this on actual acetate records. It's crazy.
It is crazy. When I was like, what does that mean? What was he doing, like dueling acetate records? And I looked and my eyes popped out of my head.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable the innovations he was coming up with. So he's doing all that. He's becoming more and more popular. And then a very faithful thing happened. A steel guitar player named, do we say Joaquin Murphy?
That's what I'm going with.
All right, that's how it's spelled. He came over to Les's house one day, and he said, you know what, I got this guy here. I want you to meet him, and he's really good with working on amplifiers, and I think you guys might like each other, and his name is Leo Fender. And before
Wait,
you know it, and this is movie territory, Leo Fender and Les Paul are hanging out together, trying to figure stuff out together, workshopping, problem solving. They, they pointed out, and he's right, that they weren't like great friends, but it's not like they were enemies or rivals at first. They just were really, really different from each other.
Yeah. They kind of shared at the very least, they had a common problem or a common quest that they were both working on. They were just not similar people personality-wise, so they didn't click,
that's
how you put it.
They weren't like, this is great. Let's be partners. We're the same.
Right, exactly. But they also were also kind of becoming rivals a little bit too, right?
Well, not quite yet. Like at this point, they were genuinely trying to figure stuff out together. And I think like Leo was coming over every weekend, basically. Musicians would come over still, and he would ask them questions and try and figure stuff out, try and solve these amplification problems. But yeah, there may have been a little friendly, like, let's see what this guy's got kind of thing. But, you know, Les Paul was like, you can't even play,
dude. Yeah. And again, remember though, Fender, by this time, he had a company, the Fender Electric Instrument Company. He was mostly focusing on electric steel guitars because not just country western loved that stuff, but Hawaiian music was really huge as well. And they use a lap steel guitar. So
yeah.
He had a company already going. Les Paul had his own musical career going. He was just kind of, you know, he tinkered because he needed to. His focus is on his musical career. So I could see there being like a little bit of a rivalry in that they were trying to crack the same problem. But other than that, they weren't necessarily rivals, you know?
That's right. And in order to really solve this problem, it would take the entrance of a third gentleman that we haven't even mentioned yet. Uh-huh. That was very, very important to the story of the electric guitar. And that is where we're going to leave you for part one.
Nice, Chuck. That was a very good cliffhanger.
Who could it be?
I don't know, but you're going to have to tune in Thursday to find out in this very special two-part episode of Stuff You Should Know.
My money's on CeCe DeVille.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Jonathan Strickland from Tech Stuff. We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at nissanusa.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.